Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the path.
I am a working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son.
And you're listening to Live for the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's lovely to be with you here on Live from the Path. Listen. I know like 1,000 of you went out and listened to the song A Prophet's Cry by Live from the Path, and I appreciate it. And let me just encourage 1,000 more to go dig on it. You can go to any of where your delightful music is streamed or purchased, and you're going to look for A Prophet's Cry by Live from the Path. You can also pick up Shofar So Good by Live from the Path.
I'm going to tell you about a prank that one of my kids played on me this week.
Okay.
And it was apparently the new Alexa software. Like you can tell it like to have responses to you and be like a character, you know?
Oh.
And so like I didn't know any of this. So I go up and tell it to play. I was trying to get it to play the back episode of Life from the Path or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, taking in some podcasts, are we? Well, let me see if I can dig that up for you. Way back in the religious section. I'm like, whoa.
Ow.
So I'm like, oh. What's going on here? And so I'm like, I let it go, you know, no big deal. And then it couldn't find it. It couldn't find Live from the Path.
Yeah.
So I picked a real specific episode that I knew there wasn't going to be a bunch of episodes named. It was Enter the McCormick.
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, play that episode, podcast episode. And it said, Enter the McCormick by Live from the Path. And I said, hey, Alexa, that's exactly the podcast I had you looking for the last 3 minutes. What was this different about? And it's like, well, excuse me, I'm doing the best I can. And it turns out that like my daughter had programmed this thing to be a sassy, like pain in the teeth. And so like she's sitting in the other room laughing at me. And I'm like, because I have AI at work, right? And if you tell it to do a thing or like straighten itself out, it'll tend to like, you know, straighten itself out. So I kept telling it like, listen, don't be making commentary on the songs I pick or like going over like general, like, you know, phrases that you want to speak into my life. Just play the tune I asked you to play or play the podcast I told you to play and stop trying to be my friend. And it's like, sorry, I guess I'll just go back to being a regular old music jukebox. I'm like, dude, I hate this thing.
I love it.
I was so mad.
Okay, I don't like to point people to the AI to like change your life, but I'm going to suggest to you that like the AI is pretty good at de-escalation, right? So like, I'm mad at this thing all the time. I don't like when it sasses me. I like, and it doesn't intend to sass me, but like it ignores something I asked or I asked something and it brings up like 15 cautions that I didn't mention. And I'm like, look, I didn't ask for any of that like stuff. I didn't ask for your opinion on this matter. I'm like sassing it all the time. And it always is like, you're right, my bad. Or like it doesn't. It's one of those things that humans always like have a tendency to like amp each other up. Like you're offended now that I'm offended. The AI don't get offended at you.
No.
And like I remember watching it respond when I was particularly piped up about something. And I'm like, you know, that's actually pretty good. It's this humility in this AI. Like it doesn't back down or anything. It just doesn't meet your drama. I'm like, I don't know, that's pretty good actually. People should learn from that.
Yeah.
This is pretty good.
Actually, that was my number one critique against it is like do you read about that guy that like I think he runs like Rockstar Games or something and he fired his entire creative staff because they were using AI. He's like, here's the thing. He goes, it can do all kinds of great work inside the box, but it does like it can only deal with ideas that already exist.
Yeah.
Right. And so like if you want to create something or have innovation, like you can't AI can't it just can't do it, you know? And like I thought about that because I was running some like complex. I was like really digging in the weeds about some problems that I wanted to fix. And I wanted to fix them. And like I kept thinking like what one of my main ideas was is there's a bunch of these old towns. Like back in the 40s and 50s, the towns used to run off their own generators, like these big old slow moving, you know, big hunks of iron, you know. Well, they became obsolete and people just abandoned them because it cost too much to get out, to get them out from where they're at. And I thought, you know what? Maybe we could solve some of our power constraints with these old hunks of iron. You know what I'm saying? Like, what would it take to like revisit them, put a new generator end on them and just put them back in service? You know what I'm saying? And get these things back on the grid. So I start asking like this AI how to do it or whatever. And like it could help me to a certain extent, but like it kept trying to bring in like situations that didn't matter. And I kept telling it like, Like, I don't care about that. We're just trying to look at this in a different way. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll figure out how to get them hunks of iron running. Like, try to meet me in excitement. And then it told me, like, all these prices. And I'm like, are you making this up? Because, like, this seems really low. And it's like, yeah, I kind of filled in the gaps with some guesses here. I'm like, hey, stop guessing. Like, I'm using you to bounce ideas off of, and you're just making stuff up. If you can't see a road from A to B, you just make a road up and then sell it to me like it's solid gold. I'm like, that's lying. That's what humans call lying. And it's like, I had no intention of lying, but I certainly did based on what you say. And I'm like, yes, yeah, you did.
Man.
And so, like, I think that's my most, like, people are looking at AI. They're like, it's going to innovate our business and it's going to do all this stuff. And I'm like, to a certain extent, there are some menial tasks that it can take over. Here's a great example of where people get run amok. I watched a guy, like, he sent out a message. He's like, hey, I got to go work in this other town. To come to your place, you know, can you give me a hotel recommendation that's close to the airport? As a response, the man that he asked produced a website with AI to explain all the hotels in town.
Huh.
And I'm like, the man asked your recommendation because he doesn't want to sleep in a crap hole.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, tell me a good hotel to use. You live there. And instead, this dude creates an AI website because he wanted to use AI.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate the way we're garbage. Living. This is so dumb.
Yeah. I've actually had that. That's come up. And everybody's running into this. I know, Mike, you ran into this at work, too, where they're like, they're pressing and they're going, hey, man, one of our key objectives this year is to use AI. I'm like, that's stupid.
Huh.
It's like having a basket full of rubber bands and then going around the company going, hey, you know what we want to do is use rubber bands. I'm like, well, for what? Like, if you have a problem that you want to solve, like, even like, say the most capitalistic thing that came to mind. We want to make buku's money. We want to make big money. And then to make money, we think we can use AI to go figure out the right people to sell to. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense to me. But to be just like, we just want to use it. We just want to put plaster on the walls. We just want to put rubber bands on crap and go, look, we used rubber bands. I'm like, what kind of company is that? but like, that's not, I know why people are doing it. It's because they don't understand it. So they're just like, you know, we need to show we're leading and we're using AI.
Innovative.
Like, that's dumb. But like, but even the tech companies who know better than this, they know better than that's not an outcome. They're still like, yeah, we need to be able to tell the shareholders, like, we're cranking AI.
It depends on the tech company, right? But like, they need to train AI too. Mm-hmm. And so the more people use it, the more they train it. You know what I'm saying? So like, I think there's a back end.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like,
we're harvesting.
Yeah, there's a victory for Google to be like, hey, all you employees need to use AI more. They're not like, hey, just use it for stupid reasons. They're like, I just want to see how people use it.
Yeah.
So we can train it to do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But still, like, to your exact point, like, the guys who make chairs, they're not like, their business model should always be, we want to make chairs, not we want to use AI. If AI helps us make chairs, then great. Then we would like to implement that into our chair building business. But at the end, it's not a goal to use it. That's like saying our goal is to use a hammer this year. You're like, but we're a chair company. You heard what I said. More hammers. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Or even think of something more rudimentary and said, like, when electricity became widely available and there's a guy with a hammer and you go to the hammer company and they're like, hey, man, we really want to integrate this electricity. And I don't know, put a light bulb on a hammer or like make an electric hammer.
Yeah.
Even like, the hammer does what the hammer does. It's just a silly thing. It's a silly thing to do. I was actually at an art at like this folk art thing that one of my kids was doing over the weekend. And I walked around to the other vendors and it was kind of cool. It was a little more interesting. A lot of these art things have the same people doing the same things at all the different like vendor fairs or whatever. These guys, there's just got some interesting things in there. Although I think there was they wouldn't come right out and say it, but I think there were a couple Wiccans making bread, making goods. And doggone it, these cinnamon rolls look good. But I'm like, I can't buy these cauldron cinnamon rolls.
Paul says, don't let it be a problem.
I know, but I just... Anyway, something didn't feel right about it, so I didn't get them. But like, anyway, there's a guy who was doing like 3D printing ceramics, and like you could kind of see the layers. I didn't even know they could do that. Like that's a material that a 3D printer could do, you know. And he's like, look, you know, they're 3D printed. I'm like, why would I care about that? Why would I be excited that you told a machine to make something that people wouldn't make by hand? Like, if you made this same thing by hand, I'd be like, wow, dude, nice.
Yeah,
but that you had a machine do it for you as if that was the virtue. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would I? I mean, whatever. He seemed like a nice enough man. I hope he did well. Yeah, I'm not drawn in by it.
It could have just easily been a template. You know what I'm saying? They're like, I sat and watched this thing make it. And I'm like, I think you're double the fool now because it would have made it without you sitting there. You know what I'm saying? Right? You just tell it to go and then leave.
Yeah. And actually, there's another thing, another art thing that I've seen recently where like a lot of people are just like 3D printing like plastic dragons and stuff, and they're doing it, and they're like, hey, look at this one. It took 28 hours to print, and that's why it's $75. I'm like, 28 hours to print? You mean like if I had a document that was 300 pages and I hit go, I had to wait longer for it came out, but like you didn't do anything extra. I mean, you have a little more plastic in it, I guess.
Right.
But like that's not an $80 dragon compared to this $30 paperweight you put together. I just, and we'll get over it. You know, like people follow technology and then they come back to realize that like humans actually care about humans. You know, what's funny is I was talking to somebody at work about this today, that like regardless of where the technology goes, all the promises that I think like fast speed and innovation and things come with, people are not going to want it. They're actually like, people like dealing in gray. They like working through problems together. They like hearing another voice on the other line to go help them with something, even though they could have done it themselves. This is why like companies have spent all kinds of money. And it's succeeding in the younger generations. People will order pizza because you can do it online versus having to call, and like they'll choose that pizza restaurant.
Yeah.
So like some of that is working culturally, but like at the I do think actually you're going to you'll always come back to that, like there are things that yes, humans could do for themselves, but they don't want to. Like why would they want to do that? They actually want to interact with another human, and they like grayness and they like nebulousness, because if someone could like reckon and render the entire world for you right now, then you're just walking out a series of like utilitarian choices. Like you would do this thing and not this thing because it's like 60% good, 40% bad, so you do the more good thing. And it's just like there's no life experience in doing that. And so it would be kind of like going on to, you know, you could imagine that 10 years from now, most people are finding matches on dating websites through like AI algorithms and stuff that go, look, you got a 98% match with this person or whatever. And you know what that means is like you never meet people who stretch you. You don't find that perfect someone that hates movies, even though you like movies, and would never hike in their life, even though you love it. And it's still someone that you would spend forever with. And so, like, I think it'll ebb and flow, but I think it will eventually always come back to the fact that, like, humans are more complicated and grayish than that. And, like, everything that technology promises, the reality is we don't probably want it. It will just take a while for us to recognize that.
Yeah. I wonder if my wife and I put our stuff on a dating site, if it'd match us.
Yeah, right.
After all these years.
Right.
Like, maybe it was a bad choice.
Her profile's like, I don't like people named Dan.
Yeah. It's going to be rough.
I like people with like very basic colored shirts. And it's like, oh no. And big dogs. Okay, you're listening live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. So we're going to talk a little bit about when it comes to, I mean, there's always been discipleship and stuff. But the question is that like, does what the church, when the church gathers as a community, and think of it primarily like Sunday morning stuff, in what way or how does it prepare us for the coffee on Monday morning? Especially if, and I think this isn't true in all contexts, but I think for many, with the proliferation of like teaching and stuff available online, I actually think a lot of the substantive stuff happens on a coffee on Monday morning, or the dudes, you know, beanbag group on Tuesday afternoon, or like that kind of stuff. And so the question is it like, how do we think about that? Or what are the ways we should think about, you know, what does it look like to do those types of things? And like, I think the fellows in this room have a lot of experience doing that kind of stuff. And like what has been working? And then like, how might we think differently about what the church does communally to prepare ourselves for the things that happen kind of individually? And so we'll talk through that. I'll start off with something small, and maybe it's just I don't know, maybe it's an encouragement. There was a guy on a podcast who was talking about they had done studies around just positive thinking. And I don't mean like, hey, if you dream about a new car, you'll manifest one. I don't mean that. But the point the guy was making is that like, if you get up in the morning and you go, look, it's going to be a great day. Like, there is something, like, think of it like problem solving. And so I've always found the ability to solve problems or think of ideas just like a miracle of the mind. Because the reality is that, like, when I want to think of a way to solve something, I read or someone tells me about what the problem is, and then I go, and I make noises, and I stare at the wall, and I doodle a little bit, and then something happens, right? Mm-hmm. I did not put any effort that I can tell, right? I it's not like you just like moved a chair from one side of the room to the other. That you could say, oh, how did that chair move? I picked it up and moved it. But thinking of ideas or solving problems more so like just shuts other things out and just goes, I'm going to try to tune all my faculties out from other things and then just let it run and see what happens. And then it just goes, oh, bang, here's an idea. And so, like, it's always been really easy to go, look, even if I'm the guy who thought of something, to, like, humbly advocate that it's the best, because I'm like, I take no credit for this. I don't know where it came from. I just sat still for a minute and this thing happened, you know? And so anyway, I when he was saying this, he was like, look, if you start the day and you go, look, it's going to be a great day. Like, it's almost that you've given your mind the problem to solve in what way it will be a great day. And like you've basically tuned your thinking into now be looking for ways to both interpret the day as it sits and find opportunities in that day for it to be great, simply because like you pointed your mind at an idea, and it, just like the ChatGPT, will start filling in the gaps and stuff. And I'm like, okay, that actually makes sense to me way better than people who are like, I will manifest a mate and my spouse will come today. Like, I don't know about that, but I do think like trying to get your mind focused on something and centering on it as if it's a problem to solve will put your faculties to solving it, because that's how I solve problems anyway. And so, okay, well, that's interesting and great. You probably should do that. And then I thought, like, well, you should point the same thing to the work of Jesus. Like, if it's the same concept and go, like, not, Lord, I'm going to manifest a missionary opportunity today necessarily, but, like, just, like, what are you tuning, what problem or opportunity are you setting in front of yourself for the day so that you take the world in that way as you go? And you probably can do it multiple times. This is where you like this Jewish praying three times a day, or even the Muslims, right? Like, you just taking time out to focus and say, look, my mind's saying, now they're not necessarily praying ahead into the next few hours or something, but just like, I don't know, just constantly refreshing the what you're looking for in the world so that your brain is attentive to it. That feels like something that could be valuable.
Yeah, I like to like if I'm trying to figure out like what I'm gonna teach for the next few months, whatever. I have no idea.
Yeah,
and I'll take some time. I'll just block off time and I'll just sit there and think and pray or whatever. You know, I like to say it's real spiritual, but sometimes it's just staring blankly at out the window, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're going to do a thing in Proverbs. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know.
Yep.
And then it kind of starts forming together, and that happens a lot for sure.
Yeah. And so if it happens on like those, I don't want to say like minor, but like micro, like, hey, I have a problem right now in the moment. I have something I want to solve, and just simply giving it your mind attention for a while will get you a direction. Mm-hmm. If you wake up every morning and go, look, it's going to be a great day, and like, I bet I got something that does kingdom business today.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in. I'm in for it. Let's go. I don't think it's magic or anything. I think it's using the things that God gave you to like flip on some switches and go, hey, sensors are on. Let's do it.
I always call it like it's cooking, right? Like in the teaching context.
Yeah.
I like to read the text I'm going to be teaching on, you know, maybe even Sunday night or Monday, Tuesday. I don't do anything. Just read it.
Yeah.
You know, and let it just kind of soak in a little bit and it just kind of cooks. I don't know what happens in there. And then you start looking around and reading and digging here and there, and it kind of grows as the week goes on. That's my process.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what happens by the end of the week when you're like, I have no idea how I got here. I couldn't have done that if I just like Saturday morning, you know, decide, hey, I'm going to do something real quick. It took time of even without effort. It was just there.
And processing.
And processing. And
it is a lot like our conversation from last week about and like looking out the window.
Yeah.
And seeing like if you just woke up in the morning and like with an actual inquisitive mind thought, I wonder if God's moving around today.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's out doing stuff that I might be involved in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And just
find
like
out.
Preparing your heart and your mind for, hey, like I'm on the lookout for this.
Yeah.
You know, not just taken by, like, it'd still be a surprise and it'd still be cool when it shows up. But like just having the mind that goes, I'm going to be looking for God to be moving, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you're ready to jump in.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you were expecting it.
But you're half tuned up.
Yeah, that was your footing when you got up.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm wary of, you know, things that act like you are like moving energies around in the world. But just the way that guy was talking about it, like that made sense to me because I see it on how problems and like ideas happen in most people's lives. And like, hey, can you point that same thing to like, here's what I don't want to miss today. And you just kind of say, now it could be how you pray or whatever, but like, I will say it's different than like reading your Bible in the morning. Like if you can go read 1 Kings, you could go read Colossians and you could go read chapter 8 of Revelation or something. And it's all righteous things, but all those things don't inherently go, okay, now I like, mind, be on the lookout for what God's up to today. Boy, I'm excited about it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Like so it's not like, I'm not saying don't do those things. What I'm saying is that like, it actually, I think is a different thing and you can pray it. I think it's perfectly fine to pray. I just think there's just something about, you know, just set your mind for what you want it to be looking out for. It seems to be able to just solve problems because you stared at something. And so like, I don't know, let's put it to work for what we care about.
Yeah. And like all that stuff is good for your discernment on, especially when it comes to the Jesus stuff, right? The mind is a very powerful operation and God has given it the freedom to either go with him or against him in multiple facets, you know? And so like it all kind of couples together in this big thing, you know, where you go, look, I want to like anticipate that the day is going to be good. Like even if God's not moving in a real specific way, or I feel like a job has jumped out at me, or like, you know, a very specific thing God is inviting me into for the day. Maybe that's not what happened, but maybe I appreciated the walk from the car to my building. You're like, man, it's just nice out here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's revitalizing in a way, but it all gets discerned through what you know about God and his character. And like what God, if God is good and if all he can be is good, then the things that he's bringing into you are part of him too, like the presence of him and the creation he's made and all that stuff. And so like, it really is just a holistic way of looking at life and going, and what it really does, I think that the most useful thing is it like helps you perspective some things, like stuff that like appears really big on a world scale. You're like, you know what? I can see it past this. I can see that it's not this giant weight everyone's selling me. You know what I'm saying? Or you know, or something that seems small that you can take such grand beauty in, or in its innovation through God's good design. You're like, holy cow, this is just amazing how this works, you know?
Yeah.
Which normally you would have missed because you just went like, meh, you know, it's a mechanism.
Yeah. You know, what I think about it is that like my wife used to do. She's like, I want to do like affirmations with the kids when they were little. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know about these affirmations. These seem kind of like, I am joyful. I am smart. I don't know. They weren't that. I don't remember what it was. But now if I think about them, it's not, again, it's not like you're trying to manifest a thing. It's actually setting boundaries. It's going, look, man, I'm not going to let the events of the day boss me around. So like, hey, I'm going to look out and say, look, this is going to be a great day. And it's the day that the Lord hath made and I will rejoice and be glad in it. Like, hey, I'm going to be on the lookout for things to be glad for. So when you set the boundary for the day, then other stuff doesn't start to like, doesn't get to take that from you. And so like, that's not some weird mystical affirmation. That's you saying, look, I will not let somebody else tell me the story through their own lens. This is the lens God told me I'm supposed to look at it. That's how I'm going to look at it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I'm getting more comfortable with the thing. Like, I'm like, I don't know. I think it seems very practical to me for what in this moment.
Well, it seems like the people of Israel, as they were going out of Egypt, there was a portion of them who woke up every day thinking, well, I suppose we'll die.
Right.
And you know, so they looked at all the negative and grumbled and were like, let's just go back to Egypt. It's so much better there. And then there was a portion that said, man, I wonder what God's going to do.
Yeah.
You know, look how he got us here. What's next? Who knows?
Yeah.
And that seems to be kind of a general theme that we follow. I mean, it truly helps you on quite the adventure in faith, I think, if you're looking for opportunity.
Yeah, because you can be a follower of Jesus Christ and have the presence of the Holy Spirit in you and still be a very negative person.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For sure. Right there. So it's not just, it's not an instant change in you that outside of your own capabilities, you're just this joyful person now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you do actually have to buy into it and train your mind and train your soul, you know, to stop looking for. And I think the Holy Spirit will help you with this. I think God's word will help you with this. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's just like anything else God offers. Like most of them you have to accept, you know, so most of the time you have to accept the offer that God is giving you.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people have all these great stories and you think, why does it always happen to them? Because they're assuming.
Right?
You know,
they're taking the world in that way.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, oh, there's God, I'll jump in and help.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just driving by thinking, man, I wonder what that was, and doing my thing.
Yeah, and like pessimism is a very expensive I told you so. Like it's self-serving. I found this in even the work that I do is that like I have had to try very, very hard. Like people have ideas about stuff they want to do in the business or whatever, and a lot of it comes through my team. And like, I mean, it's pretty easy for me to go, it's not going to work, man. Yeah. Like, it's just not going to work. But here's a reality is that, like, there's very little virtue in being right. Like, sometimes you go, look, that's a real risk to the world. Let me show you what I think will happen, and then you can make your decision off of that. But, like, what I've found is that there have been things where we've, you know, gone out and done a thing, and I'd be like, hey, after 2 or 3 years, man, this is probably going to go south on you in this way. And then 2 or 3 years later, it has. It has done the exact thing that I said. It's like, we should have approached this differently. But you know what nobody wants to hear? I told you so.
Right.
And they find no virtue. They don't go, you know what? Ben is awesome and right because he knew how wrong we were. Nobody gives a crap. There are no points in it. And so there is a lot. I think the very practical, wise people, let's say practical people have a really hard time with optimism because it feels like a lie. Mm-hmm. But here's what I'm going to tell you. Pessimism doesn't do anything for most people. And optimism is the ability to see opportunity, not necessarily to lie about reality. And that's the thing you got to switch in your mind. Yeah. Is that like just being an optimist doesn't mean that you're going around going like the world isn't what it is. But you do go and say, I could see how this could how this could be positive. And now if I believe that could be true, now what actions can we take to try to make that more and more likely? That's the work of an optimist. People are like, I'm not a pessimist, I'm a realist. No, you're a pain in the teeth. And you're only saying that because you actually are not optimistic. And I've intentionally not said that, but I would have meant it. Yeah. But I'm just saying that like, we got to be people of hope. And I don't know, whatever mechanisms you need to do to try to keep that in control, are probably good. All right, listen live from the path. All right. So we were talking about this before the show on like, does the message on Sunday prepare you for coffee on Monday? And I think the answer was no. Like oftentimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. Some of this goes with like discipleship has always actually been that way. We're asking a whole heck of a lot out of a Sunday morning. Sunday morning can't disciple people. It'll give truths. There's something very positive about a communal gathering like that. Like it's an integral of the church. The church has always done this. And before that, they went to the temple. These are good patterns and you should totally do them. But it isn't the only expression of what Christian community looks like. As a matter of fact, if you're looking in the, you know, in the early church, these people are meeting most days. In some informal, in like formal or informal way before they're going to work. Now they tend to live closer. Our societies are different. Fair enough. But I just think that like, what did it look like? Or what does it look like for us to go? If a lot of the substantive growth that people have, the one-on-one conversations, the things you don't tell 75 people, but you tell two dudes in front of you, happen on a Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock at the coffee shop or like at the men's meeting on Saturday morning or something like that. How do you do, like, what do you think about doing that well? Because you're sending a lot of independent contractors out. Like, people, you look at your whole church and they're like, you're like, if there's 100 guys out there or ladies who are like, you know, I think I should go meet these people for coffee. You're like, that sounds great. But then you could start looking these people in the eye. You're like, I know what those guys have said to me out loud. And I don't know if they should be one-on-one talking to people. Right. Mercy. That's and so, like, but they should be, but they should also be saying the right types of things. And that goes back to a conversation I think we were having a couple months ago, which is like, I don't know, I mean, people can say all kinds of stuff. And so how, what does it look like to do this well? If are there any patterns to it? And are there any ways or things we should think about from like, what does the church do like communally that might help well serve some of those type of exercises during the week?
Well, I think the just the ministry of Jesus is a pretty good example. I mean, there were times he spoke to the masses.
Yep.
And there were hundreds, maybe thousands, who knows, in some circumstances. And then there were times he was just with the 12, and then there were times he was just with the three.
Yep.
Inner circle. And then sometimes he gave him assignments. Obviously, they were with him and watched him do what he did, have the conversations he had. And point being, there's no reason we can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, within our local churches, like, hey, I'm going to pick two or three guys and have them come with me when I go have coffee with someone.
Yeah.
I like to do that. I'm not very good at it. I often forget. Of course, also, it's usually at a time a lot of people can't go. But I'll say, hey, run into the hospital, come with me. And they go, okay.
Yeah.
We run off together and go see someone.
Yep.
So I think what being intentional about that helps in that discipleship making, because then you're, that's how you learn, is by watching and then doing. So.
Yeah, I do think that, like, shy of other principles and practices, if you can keep a hold of follow me as I follow Christ, that will serve you really, really well. Like, I remember, it's been all kinds of times, like, I've met with different people who are different levels of, like, connection with me. You know, some are friends, some are just acquaintances, and some are, like, deep Bible study people, and some are not. But, like, here's what I know is that, like, the unique thing that I can offer at any given time is, like, I'm trying to follow Jesus. Here's how it's going in my life. Here's what it looks like in my marriage. Here's where my Bible reading is at. Like, things that, what it looks like to try to follow Jesus. Here's me trying to get up in the morning and go, Lord, it's going to be a great day, and I think you're out there working. And so, like, whatever. It's what I'm trying. I can offer that. I don't need to posture beyond my own abilities. Mm-hmm. I don't need to act like I know more than I do, or that I'm more holy or faithful or whatever the things are.
Expert.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know that I'm following Jesus, and I know, and this, and I have my own experience in that. Like, if you can do that to start, and just say, like, just that, I think it sets you in the right direction. Now, I think there's other things you can certainly do on top of that. And Mike, I'm kind of curious in your experience, because you've done all kinds of different things, like different studies and different, like, discipleship stuff with people.
Yeah.
But I think if you just start with the orientation that, like, it's not you going, hey, my church told me I should invite people out for coffee, and then you're going to prepare, like, a sermon or whatever. Like, just follow, just have, bring people along with you as you follow Jesus. And I think you'll at least stay in the right bounds of what it looks like for that to be healthy.
I feel like this is, like, the way that I generally approach it is, like, it's like looking out the window for me, right? Like, I will invite just about anybody to coffee. Anybody who is half friendly with me, even people that I barely know. I'll be like, hey, man, you want to grab coffee? You know, or someone says, hey, you should have coffee with this person. I'm like, I don't care. Okay. You know what I'm saying? And then I'll be like, hey, man, you want to go meet up for coffee? And then, like, it's just listening, right? And basically, listening is looking out the window for me, looking to see if God's got their attention.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't. You know, maybe it's just, hey, you know, we just sat and listened. I heard your life story. I didn't offer a word of advice. I'm like, that's crazy, man. You got all kinds of stuff going. You know, I'm interested. I know a little bit about you. And next time I see you, I'll be like, hey, man, how's that whatever going, you know? And that was it. And that was all that happened, you know? And in fact, I had a group of kids. They're barely kids now, but, like, they were my hope on offense kids. And so, like we were like, look, everybody's going to take somebody to coffee. And, like, your entire goal is, like, you're not going to preach to them, right? You're just going to talk to them, find out what's going on in their life, tell them what's going on in yours. And I said, I would really like it by the time that all ends that you could be like, hey, can I pray with you before you go? Or how can I be praying for you, you know, for your life or whatever? I said, if that's the only Jesus that comes out of your mouth, that's completely fine with me. But I want you to sit and go through it, you know? And so they did. They all went out and met people, and to varying degrees of whatever, you know, some got ended up invited to church somewhere, and some was like, yeah, that's, you know, they're just, God's not trying to get their attention right now. That's not where their heart's at, you know, and you let it go. But like, I think it does tie into everything that Ben said, that, like, what, let's say that you feel like God's moving. He's doing work in them, even if it's real subtle. They don't know how to, they don't know how to say it right, or, you know, like just some real telltale signs that like the presence of God will do, you know, some very specific things in people, even if they're not currently following him, you know? And so you're like, hey man, I tell you what, you want to either grab coffee next week and then just try it again, you know? And then be like, hey, is there any change? What do you think about getting a Bible study with me? You want to try to go? I've been looking at this thing that I wanted to go through anyway. It seems like you got some free time. Come on, why don't you go through this thing with me, you know? Because now you're friends. You know what I'm saying? And so like people are like, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll give it a shot. Sure. You know, and as you start to go through it, and it doesn't matter what Bible study it is to everything that Ben said, like it turns into follow me as I follow Christ. So your whole life is now showing people what it looks like for someone to follow Jesus in your failures, which you're going to be honest about, in the things that God was really generous in your life. And like, you can look back at your life and go, I don't know that I've ever looked at a timeline before, but if I were going to look back at a timeline of my life, I can see where God was moving and why he put me through a thing and why he had me go left when I thought right seemed like the only answer. You know what I'm saying? And like, be like, because it's way more about, it's not like it's not about the Bible specifically, right? But what it is about is application of what a life lived with Jesus looks like into your life. Because like people read the Bible and go, you know what's an idol? Baal. Baal is an idol. And we're like, do you know what's an idol to you? Politics, my friend, right? This is where you're putting all your time. Or like sports. This is where you're putting all your time and all your effort. And so like it doesn't say that in 2 Corinthians, yep. Right? Beware of get-togethers where people are playing with the balls and everyone is sitting there watching it to 10,000 people and you spent $80,000 to get there. Like, it's not going to come up, you know, but you go like this, like that, right? Like the Bible says, like Jesus says, like that. Like, tomorrow's got enough trouble for the day. Stop trying to be in trouble. You're bringing all kinds of trouble into your todays and it's got y'all tied up, bro.
Yeah.
Right? Like, see what's going on, you know? And so it's that, right? That's what discipleship tends to look like. I think for the stuff that I've been through is like, I need you to take the things that Jesus said or that God showed us in the Bible and go, how is that like me in a way? It's not to me or for me specifically, but like, God said this was good and God says this is harmful. Let's start looking to see where our stuff starts to fall in some categories and maybe we can make sense of our own life here for a minute and realize why we feel the way we do, because we either have separation with God because of sin or like we have unresolved things with other people that God says, that's just you carrying that around, man. You gotta figure out how to unburden. So like if we're having a hard time doing all those things, these are all things we take up to God with petitions and be like, hey man, I'm on the struggle. Here's the things, you know?
Yep.
And so like, you don't get to do that on Sunday. You don't get to hear someone else's story. You get God's word preached accurately and the Holy Spirit will do work in people. But like, if they just don't have the opportunity to see how their pieces fit into the pieces or your pieces fit into the pieces, like then it never quite gets down to the level where it starts to actually change the way they look at the world, you know? And so like, that's where I find like I've just had a lot better opportunity to share what following Jesus actually looks like over coffee than I ever had, even in a small group. Like I like to go to a coffee with like two other people besides me maximum, because people start playing a character of themselves past that. You know what I'm saying? If you want to actually get, because like if you're there with just one person, you can be like, listen, you're posturing. I don't even know. Is this a real version of you or is this the one you break out for awkward coffee? Because we can skip this if you want to just bring me the real guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you can't say that in a group of five because now you're embarrassing right. people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But a group of one, you can be like, does this work for you? Where like you're going to be like this guy today because I don't have time for this. You know what I'm saying? And so like, I don't know. I find like the discipleship part, it is way more personal and way more intimate, if you can use it in the cleanest version of that word, right? It's just, you're like, hey, look, I'm going to get to know you. You're going to get to know me. And hopefully, like I got accused a couple weeks ago, it was actually hilarious and true, where someone said, like, he's a charlatan. He just invites people to coffee pretending that he wants to be their friend, but really he just wants to tell them about Jesus. I'm like, yeah, that's accurate. That's an accurate description of me. And I thought I should be kind of offended, but really it's the truth. And but it's way less sinister than that. It's more like, hey, I get to know you and like I get to love you. And like, how could I not tell you about the thing that has changed my whole life? right? Like, what kind of friend is that? You know, my ultimate goal is not to snake you through a program or a 101 class and be like, boom, there's Jesus. What do you think now? But like, the more I get to know you, I know your stuff, you know my stuff. I'm like, dude, God's got all kinds of stuff that he would love to help bring to redemption inside your story. Let's figure out where that's at, you know? And so like, I find it to be just, I don't know. And it could be just the way that God wired me in a way that operates like that. But like, I'll take a one-on-one Bible study or like a three-person, you know, meeting every week consistently and praying for each other throughout the week and texting worship tunes you found. And mm-hmm. I'll take that any day, you know, opposed to just blankly talking to 75 people.
I think the reason the church as a whole does not do that is we're in such a big hurry. So we make cookie cutter.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, we need our next record-breaking attendance. Yeah. We need to, you know, we need to build a new building, you know, all the stuff, you know. I don't have time to sit with one person and have coffee.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
get into your life. Are you going to give?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I mean, honestly, that's just so sad about the modern church.
Can you think about what it feels like, and not to take anything away from like our Sunday morning church, right? This is what we do, you know, but like you're going to be living it for eternity with Jesus. And when the time comes for your friend to show up, and like, it's not going to be a pride thing, right? You're mm-hmm. just going to have this big old smile on your face that you're like, I am so glad I got to talk to you about that. Mm-hmm. So glad. Cause you don't have no idea what work God will do through that person. Mm-hmm. Like, that you could have discipled with your Saturday morning coffee the greatest evangelist North America has seen in the last 50 years. You know, and it's yeah. not you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You just happen to get a hold of a young kid named Billy who decides he's going to grow up and sell out Arrowhead Stadium for the Lord. You know what I'm saying? And like, somebody told that guy, you know? And so like, it's not yours to control or discern or like, and especially because it's not about church growth. You know what I'm saying? It's not about getting people butts in the seats, because almost everyone that I've gone through a Bible study does not go to church with me. They go to church somewhere else. And I'm like, figure out where God's got you. If you want to come to my place, you can. But like, I don't know. Why don't you ask him? You know? And they ended up going somewhere else. I'm like, great. I don't care. More yeah. people I get to know, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, I think you're right. Like the church infrastructure sometimes gets more filtered on, we need more people in this church. Not we need more people who love Jesus, you know, in the world. I don't care where they go, you know?
Yeah. And I think like all kinds of things have their places. Like you want to run classes during the week with 30 people in it? Great. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably great. You want to
sure.
do obviously the church is always met in some sort of large group on some fixed schedule to go, let's all get together and like remember Yahweh. Great, fantastic. You should definitely keep doing these things. But like, it's kind of a balance thing that like if God our day-to-day lives, like if our whole lives are this, then you obviously can't just segment it off and go, we only do these particular things that other people have set up for me. The question is like, what does it look like in your house? What does it look like, you know, in meeting people in like even as couples or as on for coffee on a Tuesday morning or something like that? Like, it is unlikely to me that there's a majority of people where God's like, nah, I got Mike having coffee with everyone.
Yeah.
No one else needs to do
that. And that's
this.
A great point. Like, you should still do the 30-man gathering or the 30-lady gathering or the whoever. You should still teach the Bible study. Mm-hmm. But something tells me that somewhere in that 30-people gathering, people should be sniffing out coffee or beer or something. Like, you should be meeting somebody.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't stop at that. I came to be entertained or to be enriched by teaching, and then I left. I came, I consumed, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the fail, right? Like, the thing that it just wells up inside you that you're like, I just want to be able to share the thing that changed my life. Even if I'm not the greatest example, right? I'm not the poster boy of the best work God has ever done. You know what I'm saying? Except for that I am. Do you know what I'm saying? Even in my failings, I am.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? And so like you just don't get to do that. Even a very vulnerable guy who teaches, he gets up, he teaches, he tells his backstory. I was addicted to this. I did this stuff. God got me out of this, whatever. It's just not the same as looking another human in the eye and going, now like me, like you, tell me about you. You know what I'm saying? And like, people will tell you all kinds of things you know, because like they know back three layers in, they know it needs redeemed. Like even if they'll fight you on it, they know it needs redeemed. They know they need God's look at it. They know that it needs a fresh start. They know that it needs to be put to death and out of their life or whatever, all the things. But like, you just cannot do that. There's a level of protection in most folks that you're not going to do it in a big group like that. So discipleship comes down to, listen, like, I'll get rid of mine, of the thing that I'm using to protect what you think of me, so you can see that God can get down there too. You know what I'm saying? And so like, you just, I don't know. I've just had, I will, any opportunity someone goes, hey, you know, we should meet up for coffee. I'm like, great. Even if I show up and like, they just wanted to talk to me, because they like me. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, if God's not moving their life, I'm thankful I had the opportunity to talk to somebody. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to keep praying on this. I'm going to wait. God will get them. And I'm going to be sitting right here when he does. And I'll be like, coffee number two, let's do this. You know what I'm saying? And so like, I think there's a couple folks that I've waited out for 3-4 years. And I knew it 3 years prior. I'm like, it's not yet. It's not yet. And I just kept praying on it and waiting and praying on it and waiting and praying on it and waiting. And finally, I'm like, hey, man, coffee, let's do this. You know?
Yeah. Hmm. All right, you're listening live from the Path. I don't know, maybe do you have thoughts? Like, what's been, well, actually, Mike, let's, before we leave that, what about, so you've done, you know, Bible studies with people, discipleship studies with people. Do you feel like, is there any particular things that you're like, oh, this is strong, you should walk them through this thing? Or does it like just depend on the person and like what, or does it just matter what you're doing? And as long as you're going through it with them, with somebody else, then it's fine.
Yeah, I think I think you got to pray. I think you should pray on it. Yeah. It's hard to, sometimes I'm like, God, point me to a study. And like, he's never done that. You know what I'm saying? He's never like, I really like Blackaby's study, Experiencing God. You know what I'm saying? Like, but like, I know studies, like I know I've done enough of them where I know, like, you kind of gauge where people are at, you know, like if they're just starting their walk, like there's some like getting to hear, like understanding how to interact with God studies that like, this is not, we're not here yet. Right. Let's understand who God is and what that looks like and who we are and that, you know, so you pick a Bible study or do a book or something. And then there's some studies that are a little bit more in depth, like this is how we turn our whole mind frame and we look to see where God's moving in our life. And like, we actually willing to say yes to some things that we would practically and logically go, I can only see this landscape, so I'm going to say no to that, you know? And like, that's a maturity thing. I'm not really good at discerning, like until maybe recently that God's helped me do a little bit better at that. But, overall, like, let's say you have no idea what to do. Like we've had studies where I'm just like, hey man, the three of us are going to read, you know, the book of Colossians this week. And so let's check back in next week. Just take notes, see what hits you, pray on it. And you'll be like, God, you got anything going on? And then we'll just see if anything stood out to us, you know, start small. The conversation's not going to be 3 hours. It'll be 20 minutes, you know, or I got nothing. Colossians was blame. I'm like, okay, I hear you. You know, let's move on, you know? And so
who would say that? Who would say that?
Hey, here's the deal. We're going through Colossians. Actually, Ben's teaching through Colossians at church. And so I've read it on my own and I thought, man, you could just put me in a pulpit and tie me to the ground and be like, Mike, preach on this. I'd be like, I have no idea what he's saying most of the time. Like, there's so many run-on sentences and bloviated language. And I'm like, sometimes I think Paul, it just uses words because he has them. You know what I'm saying? He's just like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what are you saying here?
That does happen. Yeah, my wife had read, she's like, I think she even suggested it. And she's like, I found it real, real practical. And I read through this thing, I'm like, that's not what I got out of it.
Nope.
I mean, I find it fun to teach, and I think it's helpful, but like, I don't know that I want, it's not James for sure.
No, well, right? Here's, most people pick out like, which is so weird to me, but like, I don't like the book of Romans. Yeah. Like, I can't, people are like, gotta walk the Romans road, and they memorize Romans, and all like, their life verses are out of Romans, and I'm like, eh. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've reread it like probably 10 times in my life. I'm like, what am I missing, Lord? Everyone seems to love Romans and they're just energized by it. And I read it and I'm like, man, this just goes on forever. I'd almost take Numbers. I would almost rather read through Numbers again than to read Romans and go, I don't know what's going on here. Like, there's just a lot of language being thrown around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could cut that in half probably.
I don't know what the Romans road is even. People have said like, you're 7, 8, and then a cross and then something. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a lot more concise places for like the whole gospel message in like a verse or two. It's fine. I mean, it's all of it's fine.
Yeah.
But like, it's not particularly. I don't find it particularly holy or anything.
What this is the thing about recommending. I'm almost hesitant to tell people my favorite book of the Bible when they ask me, because I'm like, dude, there's parts of the Bible that people are like, it changed my whole life. And I'm like, really? I am flabbergasted that you took anything out of this bloviated message, you know? But it's God's word and it's good. And like, he'll use it in any way he can, you know? I'll tell him, like, I love the book of Job. And people are like, I hated it. It took forever. It was like a big argument. I'm like, I know. I love it so much. But it just speaks like how much God goes, look, I put it in its entirety for a reason. I knew all the people I would create and the ways that it would hit them. And so, like, I have no problem with people. I've never met a numbers guy who was like, I just love numbers, you know. But still, like, people get lost in, like, love the Psalms. I'm not a big Psalm guy. Proverbs, I get a little bored. Isaiah, I love, but I get confused real fast on if we're dealing with something in real time or future time or whether we're mad at people or whether the judgment's already passed or whether it's coming, or I'm like, man, I can't follow what's happening.
Yeah. Actually, it's an interesting to think about. I don't think I would ever say that I have like a favorite book of the Bible, but like, I probably could tell you if I just started going through like how God used a particular book at some point in my life. Like the book of Revelation became very hopeful to me on a thing that I otherwise felt like I had to put on a shelf and hope nobody asked me about. Like, it opened up the whole scriptures to like, look, if I understand how God used this, then like, I have less trepidation on any of these things, and I'm very excited about it. Galatians brought me to a like a much firmer view of like of Jesus plus Spirit plus unity. And like, once you see it in Galatians, like, you it just is so glaring everywhere else Paul writes that like, it just hangs. And so like, there's things like, or even Leviticus, I remember doing some small, I was trying to like casually, like, I think we were doing like an online, like a messenger based, here I read through Leviticus and here's what I got out of chapter 2 or 3 or something. And I remember walking out, like, I don't joy read Leviticus, but like, the more I understood and studied, I'm like, okay, like, that's fun. Like, I know why they're counting people. This makes sense to me. Like, this is a very normal way to think of how their history progresses and that God cared about it and that he organized their society in such a way. And then watching humans take something God designed for good and then jack it up. I'm like, yeah, that seems like everybody's story. And then so something that I would be like, boy, just skip it. Now I'm like, no, look, like, there's something there. And so does it mean I love Leviticus? It doesn't. But does that give me confidence as I continue to take in the other things? Yeah. And so like, I think of books in the Bible is like God used a book at some point to shift to like slowly chip away some edifice that I may have about how I thought about all these things in the past, you know?
I think, so before we leave that topic, like, it's just something to consider is like how many of those things that we're setting up, like, hey, let's do Tuesday night bowling with the fellas, or let's do a soccer club, or let's have a crochet meet get together or whatever. And like, sometimes I listen to like churches come up with these plans and I'm like, if y'all ain't pulling some kind of discipleship coffee out of these meetings, like, what are you doing exactly? You know, what's funny is I find this in missionaries too. They're like these global like missionary tourists. You know what I'm saying? Like, and at the end of the day, like, they just like to travel. You know what I'm saying? And so they're like, hey, I've been to this country, this country, this country. And we're like, well, what did you do? Oh, I was just blessing people. I'm like, what? What do you mean?
There are no people there to bless people?
And like, funny enough, like, I was talking to somebody and they're like, these missionaries will go to like, or like these, like the churches will send these people to go like to the outreaches of the earth, or these orphanages, or like, you know, these encampments that people are like actually out there doing work. And they're like, hey man, it's so great to be here. Show me around. I'm like, show you around? Like, we're doing work here. Like, do a dish. You know what I'm saying? Like, go help me talk to people about Jesus. Like, sweep up the grain. You know? And they're like, oh yeah, I'm a fellow Christian. Just I'm gonna turn in about 8. When do you serve food around here? I'm like, what's wrong with you people? You know what I'm saying? And like, this, it's a problem. Sometimes like we tend to do this. Like, our presence is the blessing, and like, Jesus is the blessing, right? The changed lives of Christ dying on the cross and freeing us from sin. These are the blessings, not just your happy smiley face. Yeah. And so like, if you're going to set up a Tuesday soccer club with the youth, great. I'm glad that you did it. But like, if that's where it's stopping, like, I guess cool. I don't know. Not cool. You know what I'm saying? Eternity soccer. You have to be praying more into it than that. Like, it's not good enough that you did a fun thing. It's not good enough that you just set up a get together, right? Like, I'd be begging God to show you in whose life he is moving right now so you can set up that coffee date or set up that time to meet them or set up a Bible study with somebody. Like, don't just let it stop at the fact that you were fun, because the worst thing you can do is convince people to follow you because you're a good guy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have your life together because God is good. And like, you don't want people going, yeah, that guy's a great guy, but I know nothing of the God that he knows. Like, you've done them a disservice by making a bunch of friends. You know, no good. I think you should have friends. People should like you because the Holy Spirit lives in both of you guys. But at the end of the day, they should be seeking a relationship with Jesus, right? And having a relationship that will last them for eternity. So if it's stopping just because you're cool, right? Come on. We got to be doing better than that.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. All right, Mike, let's give out some advice.
Okay, yeah. Oh. Hold on, I didn't have it ready. You didn't set me up with enough time.
Oh, sorry. Hey, just a reminder, if you are one of the thousands of listens and downloads that are very, very surprising to me from, say, Vietnam or Pakistan or whatever, if you're not a bot, then thank you for listening. We very much appreciate it. Well, I'm sorry we talk so fast. I know that we do it. I wish I could control myself better, but I don't. And so, but thank you. Thanks for listening to the program. Also, I know we offer the complaint line. This is if anybody has any feedback for us on the show or comments they want to make, you can use the Bob Eisenhower Life from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085, call or text. Now, if you are from a foreign country and you're like, I can't use that number, you can always shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. That's available worldwide and whatever. We'd love to be able to hear from you.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path, my boyfriend and I have been together for a few months, and we're great together. We have a mutual friend who is married and, in the past, showed interest in my boyfriend. She has asked him not to show me the texts she sends him. We are both concerned about her and her husband as they are going through marriage counseling.
Oh.
I have told my boyfriend this means she wants to have a private and secret relationship with him via the texting, and it is concerning. He's trying to be supportive of her as they have been friends for a couple of years. What do you think?
That's a hard no, Bubby.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't I don't even know what we're talking about here. Wait, if you rephrase, my boyfriend, who we get on great together, insists on carrying on a private conversation with another man's wife because he's known her for a couple years, and she's working through marriage counseling with this man. And he's like, yeah, this seems like a good idea.
This is wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, your boyfriend's an idiot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you should reconsider whether you want to be in a relationship with this man if this is the rationale he's using.
I'm kind of curious when she says we're good together, what does that mean?
What does a couple months tell you? A few months? We're great together? I mean, great. You can't gauge that.
No.
Yeah, they were just matching outfits.
Yeah, I can get along with anybody for a few months.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? After that, it's where it starts to go downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is pretty straightforward. Yeah, the answer is no.
Okay, now, I know what I would say from a, if I were talking to a dude sitting in this room, I'm like, no, you don't, do not keep on private conversations with another man's wife. Especially that she's insisted, like, that should otherwise be kept from other people. This is not, now here's the thing, you're being a selfish turd. This is not helpful to her. If she's actually going to marriage counseling to try to help her marriage, let's ignore the fact that you're being a jerk to your own person. But like, if this woman is actively going to marriage counseling, like you are whizzing in her well, my man.
Yeah.
Like, you're actively poisoning another man's marriage and poisoning hers. And so even if
it's intentional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Don't give an outlet for that. Yeah. Yeah. You got to break that off. You're being selfish, fella.
Hmm. Mm. Yeah, there's no greater driver for me to really dig into somebody's life when they're like, don't tell anybody this. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to tell you right now, I tell my wife everything. There's actually very few things that I don't tell my wife. Like, sometimes if I'm like having a real deep conversation with a fella, like, I'll be like, look, I won't talk about specific things that we've talked about. I will tell very specific things about me to my wife. But like, you, like generalities at best is all she's going to get. And she's cool with that, right? We do the same thing. So, but like overall, if anyone's be like, hey, listen, I don't want your wife to know, I'm like, well, you shouldn't tell me then, because like I'm not in the business of keeping secrets from my wife. Yeah. So you should probably keep that to yourself. Mm-hmm. All right. Secular says, your boyfriend is kind-hearted, but he shouldn't agree to a secret relationship with his friend's wife. I assume he is friends with both of them. Since you asked, I think you and your boyfriend should tell the woman together that neither of you think that what she's suggesting is a healthy idea for any of the four of you.
Okay, yeah, let's get into the practicalities. How do you, I don't know if this both of them get over there and do it situation is the best recommendation, or maybe it is. Like, how would you do it practically, sever this thing?
I mean, I shoot straight from the hip. I'd be like, man, look, this is not working out. You can't be in some kind of secret relationship with me that I'm going to hide from my spouse. So like, or for my partner or whatever.
Yeah.
Like basically, like you should assume every text you send me, she is going to read.
Yeah.
Or you shouldn't text me. Is that fair?
That's fair.
What if I mean?
Okay, they've only been dating for a few months.
True.
Right. But it's probably it's precisely because she asked that it be hidden that I think is problematic.
Yeah.
I would not expect if I've had a friend, just like another dude friend who I'm like am prone to like texting more close details or personal details to this person. And they've been dating the chick for 2 months. I don't expect that he's like sharing my personal details with this person. Now, if they got married at some point, then I think my expectations were changed. Or if, like, I don't know, it just felt real serious. I'd be like, okay, I recognize now that, like, if I share something with you, you may feel like you have to for some because, like, what maybe I say something that changes your mood or something and you have to explain a little bit to someone. I understand. But, like, I think I would expect my man to otherwise protect that until he felt confident on my behalf that someone could otherwise be trusted with that. And 2 months in ain't it.
Yeah, like, is it because it's a male-female relationship that we have the biggest problem with this? I'm assuming.
Wait, specifically, like, that it's the lady.
Yeah,
and
if it was the husband that was texting the man, you know, with you know, details about their marriage or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you would not be like, hey, man, you can't be telling me.
No, I think that's fine. That's I think cool. It's all right.
Yeah. And but the problem is that like if you're basically taking, I don't know, it really depends the situation. Like it's holistically, it's not a good idea ever. Like just to have a close relationship like that with someone of the opposite sex, it just brings in dudes and ladies approach relationships differently. And like intimate relationships like that, like, you know, women are offering way more on a heart basis. Or like a, you know, like intimate conversation basis. And especially like in your actual intimate relationship, if you find the man lacking in any way, you know, especially in that department, and you find another dude that will do it, like you're starting to pull intention and affection away from the thing that you should be concentrating on.
Yeah. And like if it helps contextualize this a little bit, like what the risk is, like just think about physical intimacy that people have, like there's risk in it. You're bearing yourself. You are opening up yourself to somebody else physically. And oftentimes to get to that point, you have to work through like, do I trust this person? Do I trust this person with me naked? Do I trust this person with my body and with like a closeness to me and whatever? And so having these kinds of conversations close with someone of the opposite sex over time, like what you're doing is building up trust. And so it's not inherently that someone like that you don't have this risk with people all over the place. But what you have done is invested maybe even unintentionally quite a bit of time lowering a lot of the barriers that would keep you from, say, making a decision that you would regret with someone off the street. And so if there's otherwise, just think of it, if there's normal 10 stop signs before you end up being in a physical encounter with somebody in a normal situation, you might have taken down 8 or 9 of those just by what you have been willing to talk about. You realize this person is trustworthy. You feel safe around them. And so like a lot of those stop signs aren't there anymore. Like, so that's the risk. I know it happens sometimes. Like, I don't want to say like you're still accountable for this, but I understand that sometimes it feels like it happens unintentionally. And so this is me telling you how that kind of thing occurs is like you just take down a lot of the barriers that would stop if you met Greg on the street. You'd be like, I don't even know Greg. But But this guy, you do know, and you know he's trustworthy, and he says kind things, and he's supportive of you. Stop sign, stop sign, stop sign, stop sign.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
those things that would keep it from happening. And so that's how it happens.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's the advice. Is Secular agrees that you need to cut this off. This is not a good idea. Okay. Dear Life from the Path, my brother and his family have been estranged from me for 30 years by his ex-wife's choice. He didn't speak to our mother for 10 years after she came to live with me. 4 years ago, I connected with his middle daughter and we became close. She was the only member of that family who attended her grandmother's funeral. My niece was recently, murdered by her husband, who then died by suicide. I wasn't contacted by anyone about it. I have been agonizing over whether to attend the funeral, if I can find out when and where, and what to say if I do. What do you advise?
Wait a minute. This is the middle daughter that she became to know?
She was the only member of the family. But my niece was recently, murdered by her husband. Wow.
Murder, suicide. There's a lot of unconnected things there. Like, there's this estrangement that's been going on for decades, right? That started with an ex-wife who's not even in the picture anymore, but you still stayed estranged, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was weird.
Yeah, it's like, and that had nothing to do with the person who was murdered. Go to the funeral. I mean, just hide out in the back. You don't have to make a scene.
Yeah, the question is if you're intending to go to the funeral to make it about all the past things, you should probably not go.
Yeah, right, right.
But if you just want to go,
just show up.
Hang out in the back and leave quietly.
Show your respect, yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it matters why you want to go. You don't have to say anything. And you can usually find out when and where pretty easy through a internet search.
Right?
Our advice is you should go if you want to.
Didn't she say nobody told her? How does she know now?
She didn't say.
Oh, she had to find out pretty quick, too, then.
Yeah.
Before
the funeral.
I suppose the news. Does she live in the same area?
Yeah, once again, this is timely advice written into the newspaper that will take weeks to get to.
Yeah,
I feel like the situation is going to have come and gone already.
on our internet show. Go. I don't know. I don't worry, you know. Just generally speaking, I feel like oftentimes we're very worried about offending people who don't care about you. And like, these are the last people to be really worried about. And like, people will self-filter. Like, if they're the type of people who would be mad at you for showing up to the funeral, then these are the exact type of people where you shouldn't care what they think.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wild, unreasonable people with cold hearts are not the type of people that you should spend effort currying favor with.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, then, what's the point of going to the funeral? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the people that have died are not going to recognize that you've been there, and it's not to support the family.
It's for you.
Like, just to be part of your grieving process?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
It's not uncommon, and I've done funerals where people are kind of lurking in the back, and I'll hear a story later. It's like, okay, there was some type of family stress, and they just slipped in and then slipped out. And
yeah.
Nobody got hurt. And
like the rapture.
Yeah. I mean, so basically we're saying, like, it just really depends on your motivation for going. If you just want to pay your respects and part of your own grieving process to go, then, like, don't show up early. Don't stay late, right? Just walk in, sit in the back, watch the funeral, sing the tunes, and go.
I mean, they've not seen you for 30 years. They may not even recognize you. Get a funny hat and get a wig. I don't care. Like, don't make a scene, but I would not go out of some other reason. I would go.
Yeah, let's try not to do two things for the day. Our one thing is being at the funeral. That's it.
Yeah.
Right? We're not going to try to fix 30 years of history or all the slights, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're not going to address it that day.
Yeah.
And if it feels like it's a natural outpouring of what happened or you want to reach out a month later, then, you know, I'd pray on it, but whatever. Do what you want.
I wouldn't stay for the potato salad. I wouldn't go to the graveside.
Just
do the service.
Yeah.
Step on out.
Yeah. Yeah, just you know, humbly accept whatever the reality of your situation is, and don't try to upturn a cart that day. Let's just attend the funeral and go.
That's a good advice, just holistically. Like, if you think about, you know, where you've got chasms like that in your life, and sometimes where there's an opportunity, you don't have to overbake the opportunity and go, hey, I'm gonna totally flip this thing on its head. Why don't you just start the process of maybe the possibility that it may eventually one day flip on its head.
Hey, this is our approach to discipleship, boys. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You approach it the exact same way.
Yeah.
You're not God's man in every situation, you know what I'm saying? But like, go to the coffee, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. And it puts, frankly, it just puts too much. This is actually where we get over our skis and embarrass ourselves. Is you go into a situation that cannot hold the weight that you put in it, and then you put a bunch of intentions and consequences out of there, and you jacked it up because you're not fit for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've done this before, right? I've done this like when I've been set to meet a guy, and I'm like, oh, I know what this is going to be about because I'm going to make it about this. Showed up just guns full of bullets, ready to fire. And like, I couldn't have been more wrong on what this situation was, right? And like but just like the getting up in the morning thing, I had so tuned my mind into this is what this meeting is going to be, and this is what I'm going to say, blah blah blah. Like, I ruined it. Whatever my opportunity had been, or whatever reason God would have had me there, I had already fired. I had already had the guns loaded and knew where I was going to point them. And like, it was way more about me than it ever should have been.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, yeah. Like the same advice lands on the discipleship stuff too, right? Like, we're moldable in the hands of the potter. And so, like, don't be deciding you're going to be a jar of a sword today. You know what I'm saying? You go in however God tell you to go in.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if you need to take a breath before and go, like, play a cool man and let the wind blow, what I mean is, like, play it cool and let the Spirit do what the Spirit's going to do. Like, you showed up. Like, you did the obedient thing. You said, I'm intentionally going to do this. Don't hold things back that God is moving. Don't feel like you can't use examples that God has shown in your life. Like, again, follow me as I follow Christ. Be the yourself that God has crafted you to be. But let the wind blow, homie. Like, it's not your job to go flipping the table. You know, we all have the flipping the table story. No one else flips tables. Jesus does it one time, and like, otherwise Paul takes one to the face. And so I'm just saying that if your full view of the world is like you're in there like creating a scene in all the places because that's what Jesus would do, I just, you know, take in the full counsel, homie.
Yeah, Jesus flipped the table, and then literally 2 days later, he took the nails. So yeah. Like, you can't be painting like, oh, we're table flippers. I'm like, let's hold on a minute, because I don't know if you read the end of that story. Now, doesn't he come out victorious? But still, I don't see you doing it, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
One more. Oh, no, this is the end of this.
Yeah, one. Secular yeah. says, what a tragedy. I am sorry for your loss, but please remember that funerals are for the living. If you know your presence would be a disruptive or distraction, pay respects to your niece privately, either before the ceremony or after her burial.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. In the same way that the dead not going to recognize you're there, they're also not offended if you cause a ruckus by simply showing up. You can't control all the things. Mm-hmm. I think Dan's right. Like, you show up, you do whatever, like enough to allow you to grieve. I don't think it's fair. Whatever difficulties that family may have with you, it would be hard for me to believe that the niece had not otherwise let know that she's interacting with you. And it would be very callous to deny someone a passive ability to grieve in that situation. Yeah. I just...
Dude, this is America. This isn't Palestine. 10 years is like an eternity for us. We're like, I don't even remember why we're mad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The Middle East will hold on to this for 500-600 millennia.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we're like, I don't even remember why I'm mad at you from 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Let's let it go.
Yeah. Everybody likes the terrible president. Like, you could hate the president when they leave. And then like 30 years later, it's like, oh, he's a pretty good dude.
Oh, yeah. We owe him a library.
Yeah. Everybody likes him. It's like, we get over stuff real quick here. In fact, we fought for freedom from the British. And then like, we're making pacts and trade agreements about 10 years later. Like,
yeah.
We don't care.
Dude, we still got federal buildings with Nixon on it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Dude was impeached.
Yeah. Yeah, we're selling propaganda with the peace sign. We're like, I don't know, he seemed cool.
Yeah, he's cool again. He was upstart even against the man. You're like, he was supposed to be the man. All right, last one.
Okay,
dear Live from the Path, I gave $600 to my nephew's wife to buy a self-propelled lawnmower because they were borrowing their neighbor's. Let that sink in.
Yeah, I'm ready.
She gave me her word and promised to use it to buy the lawnmower. She also promised to take a photo of it and email it as proof.
Oh.
Well, she spent the money and never bought the mower.
Yep.
Then she got my nephew to cover for her, making excuse after excuse about why they hadn't bought it yet. Since they have run out of excuses, they now avoid the subject and are starting to avoid talking at all. Should I say something to them or let it go? It's not the money, but the lying, covering up, and treating me like I'm stupid that gets me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to bring this to you, bro, but you're stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just treating you like you've acted. Now what you need to rectify is a clarity that, like, you made a dumb mistake, not that overall you're an ignorant person.
Yeah.
And you do that by just coming out right and saying it. Say, look, man, I gave you the money to buy the mower. I know you didn't buy the mower. I don't appreciate you, like, trying to pull the wool over my eyes. Let's deal with this like gentlemen.
Listen, if someone comes up to me and says, Mike, I'm in the real straits. I need a self-propelled lawnmower.
This sounds like a math request, doesn't it?
I'd be like, okay, you need a regular lawnmower, sounds like.
Yeah.
And I bet I can find one used for you for $50.
Yeah.
And maybe when you've saved up some money and really put some work in, you can buy your own robot lawnmower or whatever you think you need. $600 is an outrageous price for a lawnmower, by the way.
Yeah.
And so I don't know whether you're just a generous fool or a fool in general, but like... you should have smelled this malfeasance coming 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, for sure.
The price doesn't equal the ask. No one gets financially tied up so hard that they are in the straits about a mower. Seems to me like you were borrowing one from your neighbor just fine, right? And so you could have been saving up money while you were borrowing the neighbor's. Unless the neighbor's like, that's it. No one will push my mower anymore. You know what I'm saying? Then like... I just can't imagine going to a family member and going, man, I don't know what happened. We made some financial decisions and we're out of mower. And we just got to have $600 for one right now. Self-propelled, by the way. That's what I deserve. You're like, what?
Really? Like with a race history.
It's outrageous.
I've grown accustomed to it.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I'm going to retract some of my callous response because, like, Maybe you've not been had in your life, or you've not had enough con artists in your life to smell this coming. Okay, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I know that I have, and this is a ridiculous request that I would certainly have said no to right off the hat.
Yeah.
But let's say that you are a trusting person and you've not had a whole lot of people pull the wool over your eyes, and you're like, okay, they said they were going to buy the thing, and you asked for a picture of it and a receipt. Obviously, you were untrustworthy of this whole situation in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? So you knew something was kind of up because you're like, I want a receipt and a picture of the mower.
Now, did they ask or does she just think, I'm going to be nice and give them a mower?
No.
They did ask.
Wouldn't that be double weird, though? You're like, dude, I want to gift you a mower, but make sure you send me proof that you bought it.
I mean, it's like, I want to make sure you actually use the intended, you know, this money how I intended it to be used. I could see that. If you don't trust them.
Yeah, if you don't trust them, what? Yeah. Yeah, it lacked discernment, it feels like.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as, Frank, the thing that reveals it as a con is, don't worry, I'll send you a picture of the mower and email it to you as proof. I'm like, why would anyone say that?
Yeah.
I would just assume you'd buy the mower and start mowing with it.
Right.
You have to send me a picture. Yeah. You know?
A history of mistrust there.
Yeah.
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 And okay. Now, here's the wild thing, which you could do. If it's not about the money, go buy him a lawnmower. I wouldn't do the self-propelled mower, but you go get it. Say, hey, look, man, I know I sent that money and it doesn't look like you got to mow, but I know you still need one. And so I got it. And you go take it to him. If the money didn't actually matter, there is not a, it's, I just think shame is fine. not as a lifestyle. And you don't have people carry things that Jesus told them not to carry. But sometimes, like, people have to, it was kind of the thing we were talking about before the show. Like, sometimes you have to experience a thing for it to affect you. Like, words don't hit you in the same way. And so, like, seeing someone go, hey, I see you didn't get that lawnmower that I gave you some money for. I know you still need one. Here it is. Sometimes that tells the story in a way that gets through that the other way does not. And maybe they go, maybe it takes them a while, maybe right away. They're like, yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. And we're going to try to get that money back to you. And then maybe you go, I didn't care about the money, man. But like, I think it's great that you're doing what you said you would do. And whatever.
Is this not the way that the Lord treats us, right? Like, he has given me forgiveness that I have squandered. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he has given me respite and renewal that I have wasted and not done the thing I said I was going to do with it. And yet he continually shows up with it again. You know, and so, like, if it truly is that, like, the $600 does not matter to you, maybe buy the self-propelled, but I don't know. Like, I think you're right. Like, I think you let someone sit in the reality of what they've done. And, like, people who act this way, right, if you're not trying to protect your own kingdom, then you can discern past it and go, right, like, who lies to cover up their stuff, people that are embarrassed of something, people that are shameful of something, people have done the thing that they shouldn't have done, you know? And so like, is for someone who is not postured in a way that is following Jesus, is lying a perfectly acceptable way to make it so you don't have to feel bad about a crappy thing you've done? Absolutely. That's what everyone does, right? And that's why God goes, don't do that. Mm-hmm. We live truthful lives, you know? But like, without the presence of the Holy Spirit in your life, then yeah, I would expect just how everyone reacts when they get busted. You know, they lie. And yeah. So like, if you can be the wiser person in the room and the generous person in the room that goes, I see what you did, here's the mower. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it speaks volume to your character and speaks volume of what you actually want to have happen in their life. Like, do you want to be right about the fact that they suck? Because like, you're already right about that. Or do you want to have their life, like have something come into their life that makes them pause and go, oh man, I've really got this the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes like, again, the thing that shakes you out of it is to see something that is like a stark contrast and go like, whatever that is, I actually want that. That looks like a life that I want to live. Now, I think like, be discerning. If they bought meth with it and they're just going to turn around and sell this mower. Okay. I mean, whatever, just be thoughtful about it. Don't enable terrible behavior. Which is maybe why I'd start with a used mower and $50 and,
seriously,
you know, see what you can do. But like, I just don't know. I think people will learn lessons. I think that the lecturing doesn't help. Actually, I think people are getting real good at tuning out what they don't want to hear. And maybe they've always been that way. And I don't think it says something good about humanity, but I recognize it in myself. My wife will tell me, hey, look, you got to eat better. You got to start exercising. You're getting older. You can't behave this way. And I'm like, nah, I don't really want to do that. But I can do it if I'm motivated by myself to do it. But if she wants to speak into it, I don't like it. I don't like to be told. I don't like to be wrangled and managed. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a problem. I shouldn't react that way. And I recognize that. But I'm capable of the thing that she's pointing me to. If I'm motivated personally to do it, then I will do it. And so like, just call that a human tendency and go, all right. I mean, you're not going to lecture someone into doing what you want. Can you show them what the behavior looks like? Can you be gracious to them in such a way that they start to like recognize the difference in a way that they actually want what you're pointing them to? Which is the same reason we do all kinds of things. Like, is there, you know, well, are my wedding services open to enabling a relationship that God said is not healthy for someone? No, they're not. But is my dinner table open? Always, always. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like let's call the things for where they might not expect that. That was the whole premise of the gospel. Is it the gospel comes with a house key? The lady who wrote that, Butterfield.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where like she went to her story was that she was married. She was in like a civil union or married to like she was a lesbian and married to another lady and was like, I mean, was an English professor of every alternative lifestyle lit available. It's like queer lit, communist lit, like what, just pick it all. And this woman was like leading this and she's going to write a book and she goes to interview this pastor. And she wants to learn about it, I think, is like a competing like angle to cultural stuff that she cares about or whatever. And this guy agrees to it, but he's like, you just come to my house for dinner on Sunday nights. And she goes like almost every Sunday for a year and a half and meets Jesus there. And like the guy doesn't do a he's not sermonizing. Like she's just interviewing the man and he's answering her questions and he's kind. And he's like, he knows that she's married to a lady and like. Like none of this, he goes like, well, why would I shut my table to someone because of that? That doesn't make any sense. And like, and so anyway, just by that and to the point of like, let the breeze blow. He didn't like try to convince her that lesbianism was a biblical problem the 2 days in. But anyway, after this amount of time, she's like, I came to know Jesus. And then I knew that like, this was going to kill me because I loved this person that I'm in a relationship with, but It's not it. And so she had to break. She had divorced. I mean, in her mind, it's a divorce from this person. And then she ended up, she married a guy. She ended up marrying, I think, a pastor. And she's written a few different books, of which The Gospel Care Comes with the House Keys is very good. I think her first book is like Stories of an Unlikely Convert or something like that. Anyway, the point is that like, just do the, you don't have to be like clever and bring the heavy all the time. And like, sometimes just do the things that Jesus pointed you to do that some people would go, I can't believe you let that, like you have this lesbian at your house every week around your family and sharing her stuff and talking to you and your kids and all the things. Like what? And this guy's, well, yeah, like what else would I, why wouldn't I do that? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand. And so, yes, if you said, if the worldly perspective was, look, yeah, it was silly, don't make that same mistake twice, I think it's okay to cut him off and say, look, you're not going to help him anymore. You could do that. That makes a lot of worldly rational sense. I'm just saying, in the kingdom, do you go, I'll just go buy the mower then because I know you still need it. And then let's see, what do they see in that?
Yeah, because actually what it does is it reorients the way that we approach discipling people and introducing people to the gospel. Is it's not based on your cleverness or your love. And that's the stickler, right? Because like sometimes we get so afraid that like if you show them generosity or people trapped in like messy, messy sin, right? And you show them your generosity and your love that it feels like you're approving of the choices they're making. And God's like, yeah, that's not on you, right? Now, like you do want, you don't, you got to have some discernment. And if you're enabling, like, or being like joining them in sin, right? That you can't do, right? But like you showing other sinners love or affection or generosity is not instant approval of their sinful ways. And so like, we got to be real careful on where we start to pull back, like the attributes that God built us to reflect into the world, and act as if they're a prize you get for agreeing that God is God, right? We reflect those things anyway, because that's the change that God has made in us. And so like, you can't join sin, you can't approve of it, you can't support it, but you can love, like full on love, and be full on generous and be full on all the things as a reflection of the goodness that God is in anyway, because that's how they're gonna meet him.
Right. If the Lord is willing to let the rain fall on everybody, then can you feed a fallible human being whose fallibilities are different than yours? Sure.
Yes.
Like, I don't know what we're talking about here. Like, I just, but I get, but I understand. I understand what we're worried about. I'm just, I think the point is to say, like, Jesus seems to have already said he'll handle that particular bit. It's not your job. You don't have to shake it all out. So.
Yeah. But, and that's the thing is it means that it's not based on your cleverness. Or the amount of time you sat thinking about, oh, this is the argument I'm going to use to get him. Or like, I hope this guy brings this up because I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
Just stop all that, right? Like, if Acts can be trusted that when it's time for God to be moving and he wants to do it through you, then it'll be his words. And so you don't need, God's not like, I'm sending Ben this time because he's sharp with the tongue. You know what I'm saying? He's like, just, I want people watching me. Like the Father, you watch the Father does this, the Holy Spirit talks, and you let that be.
Hey, and I'll tell you, now think of it this way. How often is the thing that you ended up, you know, saying to someone when you're doing, like you're talking to someone one-on-one or you end up talking to a group of people or whatever, is something that you heard or have been reminded of recently? And you could be like, oh, well, that's just the first thing that came to mind and I happened to run into a conversation of which it fits. Or God just keeps planting seeds ahead of you, man. Like you just happened to read in Galatians the thing that needed reinforced with someone you met the following week. I mean, it could be a happenstance.
Yeah.
Or it could be that God is continually just finding, like planting seeds in you that you then have the ability to give out in the following week.
Yeah.
And that seems way more likely to me.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun when that happens too.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I was just thinking about that the other day.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
Yep.
I can't be thinking of all these things all the time.
okay, so our actual send it home advice is buy them a mower.
Yeah, go buy it.
Drop it off.
I think you go buy it. Yeah.
Okay, Secular Says.
Wait a minute, hold on. Dan, you didn't say, what do you think?
No,
about
I,
this
I agree. That all makes okay. sense to me. I'm with you.
Okay.
I wouldn't have got to that buy the mower thing on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why we do community. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
buy the second mower.
Yeah, yeah. My stubborn heart would have been, you know what? Go cut that grass with scissors. Yeah. Maybe you'll learn to stop lying and stealing my money.
Yep. We get you to buy the mowers and probably to keep Dan off Facebook.
That's right.
Hold on. Okay, Secular Says, if you would like to maintain a relationship with your nephew and his wife, drop the subject. However, now that you know that they are not honest, resolve not to give them any more money. That was not our advice.
Yeah. Hey, man, it's reasonable. I would just, whatever.
Let's say, don't do it forever. Don't keep buying mowers, but
yeah. Yeah, if they sell the next mower,
yeah,
yeah, That might be tough. I mean, you could do one other shot across the bow and just go come out there and mow it yourself or something.
Hire a mowing service.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm going to let you sail on out of here to a little bit of the Prophet's Kai. But if you have any feedback for us on the show, hit us up at 515-517-0085, call or text. That's the Live from the Path complaint line. Or use our email address, info@livefromthepath.org. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.
In the hills, the lion roars loud. Echoes in the valley, judgment in the cloud. Plowshares turn to swords, the harvest going sour. The merchants wait to see, stacking greed by